Welcome back to The Analysis, where we're sharing great tech stories happening here in the DMV. This week, we're talking to Brandon Starks, the CEO and founder of The People's Market, delivering fresh fruits and vegetables from farmers right here in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia to your door. Let's learn more about his mission. Brandon, thanks for being here. Talk to us a little bit about how you came up with the idea for The People's Market.
No, thank you for having me. The concept is really based on solving a problem for folks who live in specific communities in the DMV. You know, a lot of people talk about food deserts, but nobody really talks about food swamps, the lack of healthy, high quality produce and food in specific communities. So growing up in Prince George's County, we did not have premium, high quality grocery stores. It just wasn't our norm. And, you know, as I've gotten older, moved around, traveled a bit, you know, seeing how people have access to food easily in certain zip codes really troubled me. Moving back to my neighborhood or moving to a new community, I saw that Black and brown folks specifically did not have access to fresh, organic, and natural food. So the company was really started around solving that problem, making sure that people have fresh, organic food, and we happen to work with local farmers to solve that problem, which makes it super easy because they're great to work with, their food is the best, and our supply chain is super close. It was really out of a need in solving that problem for folks in the DMV area.
Wonderful. And so how does it work? So you, where are the farms located? You're getting the food from the farms, and then people are able to order it digitally.
Absolutely. So we are a farm-to-door delivery service. You go on our website. You have a couple options. You can choose a subscription. We have a half and a full box. We curate a menu each week for those boxes. You can subscribe and get a box every week, or you can do a one-time order. And then there's also a la carte items on our website that you can purchase. Purchase whatever you want that's local and in season, and we'll deliver it directly to your door. If we ask folks to order by Thursday at midnight, and then we deliver your food on Sunday. So it's every Sunday. The process is just super straightforward, easy, and convenient, and that's really the point. We want to make it work for customers. As far as where the farms are, we have farms right here in our backyard, some in D.C., Prince George's County, Montgomery County. We also work with some regional farms in Pennsylvania and in Virginia as well. So we just are, you know, working with the best farms, folks who specialize in organic and natural food. They bring their food directly to our warehouse. We package it and send it out to folks every Sunday.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I always say fresh food tastes different because it's actually fresh. I went to the farmer's market recently in Alexandria and got some pears for baby. And I was like, oh, it's going to be a little sweet. That thing had no sugar in it. That's because it was real food. And I was not expecting that. So I think that's great. You know, it's good to have real food because some people don't have access to even know what a farm looks like. Some people have never seen an actual vegetable grow out of the ground, which, you know, is something I think everyone should have the opportunity to do. If you can start, you know, maybe a garden bed or something like that, it's good to see how your food grows, especially for kids. But also areas like Prince George's County, it's a food desert. It's hard to find fresh food. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, you know, I think Prince George's County is an interesting place, right? For decades, we were the wealthiest Black county in the country. I think Charles County just recently, like a few years ago, was their number one on the list now, right? Prince George's County got knocked down to number two. So there's money in our communities. However, trying to attract a premium grocery store to the communities has always been a challenge. In fact, when I started this work, I was looking at different zip codes in Prince George's County. There is a high concentration. When I say high, I mean like two premium grocery stores. They're both in College Park, the College Park area, Riverdale Park, College Park. And these are not predominantly Black areas, probably the least Black areas in Prince George's County. And I compared those zip codes and the median income to zip codes in Prince George's County that were predominantly Black. There were specific communities in Prince George's that had a higher median income but did not have a high-quality grocery store. So the question is, like, is it, you know, and a lot of times Whole Foods, you know, Trader Joe's, these companies, they talk about income. But when I did the number crunching, the income was higher in these communities, but they didn't have those stores. So for me, I see that this is a culture-based issue. It's not really a money issue when you have a place like Prince George's County where folks have the resources and the means to shop in these stores. So for me, number one, bring it directly to people so that it makes their life easier. It's also easier to scale a business that has a delivery model and has an online model. I don't have as much overhead. I can pay the farmers more. I can pay my staff more. I can give my customer a better product. So, you know, it just makes sense given the times that we're in and given, I think, people's awareness and consciousness around, like you said, going to the farmer's market, you know, in Alexandria, picking out your food, tasting the food, feeling the difference. Like, I just think about when I tasted my first apple from a farmer's market or had kale from a farmer's market, and it was just an experience. And I wanted to bring that experience directly to people so that they could also enjoy that food without all the hard work behind it.
Yeah, and I really love what you're doing because, to be honest, it's all about access, and people don't want to have to work too hard to find their food, which I can understand. If you're hungry, you just want something, a snack, right away. Absolutely. So you should be able to have fresh food at your fingertips as well. And I have never seen anyone in this area doing something like what you're doing, which is pretty much farm to app instead of farm to table. Farm to app. Farm to app and then farm to your home. So definitely we'll be testing it out. I also lived in Bowie at one point. I lived in Bowie about 2 years ago. Okay. And yes, I drove to that Riverdale Whole Foods.
Absolutely.
Or the Annapolis one.
Annapolis is big. I grew up in Bowie. So I grew up driving to Annapolis to get access to everything. So you take that drive down 50. You're in a community that just doesn't look like your community. You know, and I see a lot of people from Prince George's County. I grew up that way. We grew up going to Annapolis to get access to things. And I do know and think, right, that folks in Bowie and in communities like Bowie and Prince George's County have the resources, right? But for some reason, the resources just aren't in our communities. Folks know, those corporations know that Black folks, brown folks, whomever, or in those zip codes are going to travel and won't make a lot of noise about it, right? They won't complain about it. They're just like, this is just, after a while, you just get used to it, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think commerce should work that way. I think that money should stay in your community.
Yeah. And so how does it work during the winter months? So the food's got to be seasonal, I would expect. Yes. Yeah.
So we have farmers who grow in greenhouses. We also have food like potatoes, apples, squash. Those items store really well. So our farmers will harvest a lot of food in the November and December months, like really cold, like snow and super frost. There's always frost in November normally in this area and regionally. But when it starts to get really cold, then it's like the ground is frozen. You can't pull those potatoes out of the ground, those carrots out of the ground. So a lot of those items, they store really well. You could store carrots, potatoes, onions for months. Greens are the items that are a little tougher to store. We harvest greens, our farmers do, harvest greens by order. So when you all get our greens, these items they're harvested that week and then put on your plate, right? So greens, a lot of our farmers use different methodologies, hoop houses, greenhouses. Some of those spaces are heated, right, to stop the ground from freezing over. And yeah, we get through the winter. It's interesting because the winter is actually our busiest season.
Wow.
We always see a huge spike. like a quarter of an increase in orders in the wintertime. And I think people are just, they're at home, right? They have time to cook. They're spending time with family. And then, you know, as soon as it gets warm outside, everybody wants to go out and eat, and they don't want to cook and be in a hot kitchen, right? So the fall and winter months are actually our busiest parts of the season, which doesn't make sense for how food grows. Most food grows during the spring and summer months. However, you know, we have the capacity to meet our customers' needs and work closely with our farmers to make sure that all the food is fresh and quality is paramount.
That's very neat. Yeah. And another thing that people don't like to do, you know, the delivery fees. And they don't like the Uber Eats $10 to deliver a $20 meal. So how are you handling that part in terms of being able to, you know, make it affordable for folks?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, all orders over $40 do not have a delivery fee for us. I did that intentionally when I started the company. One, because I understand that a lot of people want access to this resource, and they shouldn't be taxed for it, right? You know, anything under $40, you know, it's gonna cost us to bring it to you. So we do attach a $10 delivery fee to anything under $40. However, you know, if you want a week's worth of groceries, you can spend well over $40, and we do not attach any unnecessary fees to that order. We understand that people need to eat this way. This is not like, oh, I'll just, I want to, you know, this is fun, right? This is something that I do, you know, out of, this is not a hobby. Like, folks need to eat organic and natural food. It is a must. We as humans need the nutrition. We need food that feeds our body and gives our bodies what we need to get through our days, right? So I also understand that this is a need in a lot of communities. So we just aren't, we're not going to tax folks for getting the things that they need to their door, especially when 9 times out of 10, if you look like me, those resources are not in your community.
Yeah. Wow. I'm getting so excited about what you're doing, because this is something that I truly also believe. Food is medicine.
Yes.
It's also the name of a program they just started in Prince George's County. We just did a story about it yesterday with Yamari Sase. Yeah. And yes, food, organic food is vital. Good food is vital. Food that's not overly processed is vital to avoid disease and all this other stuff that comes with not eating well. I mean, how many years have you been doing this now, and what do you hope will be the future of the People's Market?
So we've been doing this work for about 3 years now. The first year, we kind of came out the blocks soft. I was still working a full-time job, doing this work on the weekends and in the evenings. And then, you know, slowly but surely, you know, have grown the business over time, and just making sure that our systems were tight, our food was of high quality, and we're giving customers exactly what they need and listening to them and understanding what their needs are. The business was inspired by my great-grandmother, who grew up on a farm in Prince George's County. She taught me the importance of food as medicine, honestly, and that was one of the reasons why I started the business. And then as far as like our growth, I mean, we want to be a national brand. Like I said to you, this is a very scalable business. As long as there are farms and there are people, we can find space. It's just about finding the right market for us, honestly. So we're looking currently, and next year we'll also be doing some expansion locally, and then also nationally we'll be looking to do some expansion to try to find footprints that look very similar to the DMV area nationally, to connect with farmers, pack food, kind of be that middleman for the customer, and bring that food directly to your door. So I think that our growth is limitless, honestly. I think especially with everything that's happening in our nation right now, I think people want things that feel real and things that are real. I think they're yearning for it. So I think sky's the limit, honestly. I think as long as people are eating, we can be there to support their needs and solve that problem for them.
Great. And so where can people order in the DMV right now? Because I'm sure that's going to be the number one question. If I'm in Alexandria, if I'm out in Frederick, if I'm in West Virginia, how far does the app go?
How far do we go? Okay, yes. So that's a great question. So we service in the DMV right now. We service all of Prince George's County, D.C., most of Montgomery County, Arlington, Alexandria, and we also are now in Baltimore. So we're in 2026, we plan to expand to places like Anne Arundel County, Howard County, Charles County. We have a bunch of people who've been like messaging us like crazy, trying to get us to come out there. So we're working on an expansion plan right now. If you are in our service delivery area, you can find us at thepeoplesmarketdmv.com. You can also just connect with us through social media. You can find all our links there. On Instagram and also on TikTok, we are The People's Market DMV. If you are not, so when you go to our website, you click the Shop Now button, we're gonna ask for your zip code before you place the order. If you're not in our service area, please complete the form that we essentially send you on the next page so that we know where you are, so we know where to go to next. So complete that waitlist form so that we know that you're looking for our service in your area so that we can eventually get to you.
Wow, that's very impressive. And I'm sure people are going to be very excited to learn this. So how many farmers do you have that you're working with right now? How large is your staff?
So the farms that we work with, we probably work with over like 15 to 20 farms in one season. It really just depends what people are offering and growing at mm-hmm. the time. You know, we can work like each week for our newsletter. We highlight all the farms that we work with that week. It's anywhere from 5 to 7 farms each week because we're sourcing a lot of crops now, honestly, more than ever, because we want to give people more variety. That was one thing that our customers told us. So we source from a lot of farms each week. And then as far as our team, we're growing. We've got like a staff of like 15 people now, delivery drivers, packers, people on the admin side, a few managers. So we're actively growing. If you're also looking to help us deliver or pack food, if you go to our Instagram or TikTok, click on that link in our bio and you can apply to be a packer or a driver. We need more drivers. Like we're at capacity. Wow. Like we need more.
I bet. And so is that a paid position or a volunteer position?
Oh, no. Everything is paid. That's good. Everything is paid. And we believe in paying people equitably. We want to make sure our folks get paid, that they're happy. Everything is paid.
Great. And so in terms of just the customer base, are you seeing it? You said you're seeing it growing. How large is your customer base right now?
Oh, wow. So as far as our subscribers are concerned, we're at about, I'll say 250 subscribers to date. Those are regular doors that we go to. Outside of those doors, we have one-time customers that come to us every week. And then each month, we're doing anywhere from 600 to 800 orders deliveries each month. And again, we only deliver on Sunday. We only deliver on Sunday. We don't deliver any other day of the week.
That's actually brilliant because that's the only day I order food is on Sunday.
We know that.
That is great. My husband knows I'm putting in an order at Whole Foods on Sunday and I'm going to pick it up in the evening. He hates the delivery fees, so he's always forcing me to pick it up. He's like, go pick
the delivery
it up.
Fees are crazy.
Get over the $10 delivery fee.
I know.
I usually put it in on Sunday and then pick it up. That's brilliant. Because most people, especially real food, it's fresh. So it's going to either go bad after a week. I try not to do, I can't do wholesale shopping. I can only do like small quantities at a time. I am not a wholesale shopper. So this is perfect for someone who really wants to make sure their food is fresh. That sounds amazing.
Absolutely.
So I like to get a little background on the CEO and founders. Yeah. I talk to a lot of CEOs and founders, which makes me excited. That's great.
I didn't know this conversation was going to be so vast. I love this. I'm happy I came today.
I'm glad you came. Yeah, I like to yap. I like to talk. And I usually, if I like the conversation, I put it on my podcast. So this will be on my podcast.
Oh, love it.
Yeah, this is a great chat. So tell me a little bit about yourself, your childhood. People like to hear your background.
Yeah. So like I was telling you, I grew up in Bowie. Definitely like a sports and outdoor kid. Like me and my sister would just play all day long until the lights came on at night. Just like grew up in a very like safe, loving neighborhood. Had a community of people around me who really just showed me a lot of love and support. Went to high school in DC, St. John's College High School, which was, it was an adjustment for me. Being a kid from like a little town and then going to this prestigious prep school in DC, like just getting there was crazy. Like Metro, am I getting dropped off?
Yeah.
When I could drive, I was literally like driving an hour from Bowie to get.
Oh,
I was like commuting like an adult. But I think that experience really exposed me to how to just compete as a young person, right? I was surrounded by kids from all different backgrounds, from every ward in the city, every county that touches DC. And it really just taught me how to work with people from all different backgrounds, how to negotiate, and also just how to be curious and how to find the things that you love. So when I was in high school, I ran track, was just very social, was always, going to the parties and like hanging out on the weekends with my friends around the city. And then undergrad, I went to Hampton University. Which was
the other HU.
Look, come on, we're not gonna start this. I thought I saw you with some Howard stuff on.
The other HU.
Yes,
I should get Odyssey up here. Our producer Odyssey went to Hampton too.
Okay.
And my cousin. Yeah, she always talking about the homecoming. Anyway, so you went to
homecoming.
Hampton.
Homecoming was amazing this year. I hope they had a good time. Homecoming was amazing. I went to Hampton. I think Hampton was the first time that I like fully understood what it meant to just be confident in my blackness. I think it was an experience that really transformed me and kind of like molded the different jobs and like the career track that I started after college. Being surrounded by professors and people at the university who were, to me, just like, they were amazing. I idolized a lot of my professors, right? They had done so many amazing things, and unfortunately, I just hadn't been exposed to black professionals at that level. So Hampton really, really made me, informed me into the person that I am today, really helped me to understand that when you are curious and you are hungry, there are no limits to what you can do. You can find the resources, you can find the people. I literally went to school with people who I didn't talk to when I was there. But when I started this work, people started DMing me like, hey, I can help you with this. Hey, it looks like you need a little support in this area. Can we hop on a call and can I support you?
Wow.
So my network from Hampton has been amazing. And then also I met my wife there, which that changed me as a person. My wife is really the core of our household and really makes everything work and tick and keeps me going and keeps my son going. So Hampton was great. And then when the year that I graduated, Obama spoke at our commencement.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like that.
Wow.
Just think about it. Like 2008 was the first year that I voted. Yeah, because I was in that. Yeah, 2008 was the first year that I voted as an adult, and I voted for a black president, and then he won. And it was like the best experience in life. We were living on cloud nine, right? And then he came to speak at our commencement. And one of the things that he said that really stuck with me was, when you go back to your community, figure out how to solve problems for your people. And when I left, that's exactly what I did. So when I left college, I started. So I was a psychology major undergrad. I don't know why I chose that major. I was just like looking at the list and I was like, that one. Yeah, that sounds cool.
The one I will finish.
Yeah, like that one sounds, I think I can manage psychology. That doesn't seem too
complicated. That's how I felt about journalism. I'm not even going to lie. That's the one I'm going to finish.
That's the one right there, right? And I it was great. Like it was an amazing experience. But when I was in college, I got this political, it was like this political fire that lit under me after I saw Obama win. And it just honestly around that time when he was running for office. So I started to get engaged around campaigns and some politics in Virginia, just something slight. Like I had a professor, he was like, you'll get some extra credit if you come out and volunteer for a friend of mine's campaign, right? Fast forward to me coming back to the DC area. There was a nonprofit that I worked for in undergrad, and the CEO at the time, he was running for District 1 in DC. So I was just like driving down Georgia Avenue and I saw his sign and I called him. I was like, hey man, I need a job. What do you need? And he was like, I need somebody to help me with volunteers. So like I was making $200 a week working.
Sounds crazy now.
I didn't even have enough money to like eat lunch and park on U Street, because that's where the office was.
Passion right there. Yeah,
it was the office. But I will say the perks were this: the office was right next door to Ben's Chili Bowl.
Oh,
I got to eat good all the time. It was tons of like bars and great places to go to after work. And I met some really cool people. But I worked for him and his campaign. Ended up being really like integral in his campaign, like leading the volunteer team. I was young, I was like 22 at the time. So it was great to have that much responsibility, to like have to learn quickly. And I love the experience. So he lost, unfortunately. And I was like, what am I gonna do? And I guess like folks saw my grind and they saw the work that I put in. So Vincent Gray at the time, he won the primary. And then going into the general election, Fenty lost. So he was Adrian Fenty, the former mayor of D.C.
Yes.
He lost that election. I think that was 2011, I want to say. Yeah, 2011. And they were saying, the Fenty team was secretly saying, we're going to do a write-in campaign. And Gray was like, hold up, don't try to, because people don't really vote in the general election in D.C. because everyone's a Democrat.
Right.
So they were like, maybe we could just like sneak one in and like get a write-in campaign going. So Gray's folks tapped me and they were like, hey, we need to mobilize some people. Doesn't need to be crazy. We want you to lead some outreach and some get out the votes around the city. So I did that. I ended up meeting them while I was working for the candidate that I was working for. So they tapped me for that. From there, when Gray won, I ended up working for him. They offered me a job to do community outreach for District 4. In D.C., and that experience was amazing. At the time, Muriel Bowser, the current mayor, she was the council member in Ward 4. So I worked quite a bit with her team and just learned. I was 23. Learned the ropes, learned politics. It was scrappy. D.C. politics are very scrappy. If you can make it here in politics, you can make it anywhere, straight up. Oh, like, D.C. local politics is a crash course in get it done.
Yeah,
it was amazing. Like, I have folks who were smart, resourceful, just great people being like, hey, young buck, go get it done. And I was like, hey, you said nothing but a word, man. Let me hop out here and show y'all what I can do.
With this $200.
With these $200. I started making some more money then, though. I had a salary. I had some benefits. I worked that job for about a year and then got promoted to do some education policy work under Vincent Gray, which was also great. I had no experience in education policy, but again, hunger, curiosity, worked. Then after that, worked for the Department of Youth and Rehabilitative Services. They had a new program kind of related to like, not education policy, but just like keeping kids who were previously incarcerated out of the system. So they didn't want to rearrest them. So I actually was a part of lifting up a program that they had called the Achievement Center, which was focused on doing programming instead of jail. So like if a kid kept reoffending, they would send them to me and say, put them in your like 2 o'clock yoga class. You know what I'm saying? Like we had a culinary program. We had yoga. We had a music studio where we did music therapy. So I did that for a couple years. And then went back to where I grew up, Prince George's County. Worked for two county executives, Rashern Baker. I did work with him under a program called the Transform a Neighborhood Initiative, which was essentially a community-driven program, which is about giving resources to communities in need. So a lot of like the Inner Beltway communities, Suitland, Marlow Heights, Glen Arden, Capitol Heights, places in like Inner Beltway communities that are normally kind of like ignored, honestly, in Prince George's County. So I did that for a couple years. That was amazing work. I learned the political landscape in Prince George's. And then most recently, my last job before I just started doing the People's Market full time was working for County Executive Angela Also Brooks, who's now the senator, the U.S. senator. I was on her county stat team and had about 20 agencies under me, did like performance review management, budget review, kind of just like helping agencies to increase efficiencies, give them money when they needed it, take away money when they didn't need it, right? Like just look at the work that they were doing and try to help them to be more efficient with dollars in the budget and to work harder for the community, solve problems for the community. So I feel like all of those experiences kind of led to this. Like I wasn't in food at all. People are like, how did you get into this work?
I was just about to ask, how do you go from politics to food?
I mean, I think I just started to get older and realize that like I needed to find a path for myself. Like I needed to like be my own boss. Like I think that was just really one of the reasons why I started this business.
But beyond that, I mean, something must have triggered inside of you to say, you know what? I need better food.
Better food for sure. But yeah. I think the food is just solving a problem. So like I'm definitely like I'm a foodie. I love quality stuff. Like I don't play about what type of food I bring into my household. And during the pandemic, I started to become more food conscious, especially before we had the vaccine. I have a 6-year-old. My wife, I'm like trying to keep us healthy. You know what I'm saying? Like we were in a little bubble. We did all the right things, but I still wanted to make sure that we like were building immunity to like fight against COVID, essentially, right? Like I'm like, how can we naturally protect ourselves? There's not really any other resource to protect ourselves yet. This was before, again, the vaccine came out on the market. So food was the line of defense for my family. And then I looked around me and I was like, who else needs this food, right, as a line of defense? And I tell you, I was on the stat team. So while COVID was happening, I was tracking all of the data. I saw the deaths, I saw the hospitalizations, I saw the lack of capacity at hospitals where we couldn't serve certain people, right? And that was happening nationally. There were not enough beds, right? There were not enough the breathing machines for everyone. So people were literally, I don't know if folks remember this, it feels like it's so long ago, but it's only a couple years back.
Yeah.
In cities like New York and LA, right, where it's dense populations, people were dying at rapid rates. And a lot of those folks look like me. So for me, I was like, yo, like I need to protect myself. You know what I'm saying? Like my level of like putting that hedge around my family went into overdrive. So like food was that line of defense. But I honestly just feel like solving problems has always been at the core of what I've done in my career. And I think I got it from like growing up in a house. My mother's always been a problem solver. Like she's like, there's never a no or like you can't. There's just a how much time do I need? What resources do I need to fix this problem? So I think just like growing up in a house – With folks like that, it just, it kind of puts you in a space where, like, you don't accept no. You don't accept this, there's nothing we can do, right? So, like, food, yes, it's great. But I think anywhere where I'm solving problems, I'm, like, in my element. And, yeah, it just, the food is just the opportunity. It's just, like, a platform to do that. Essentially.
Mm. Yeah.
I think if it was something else, and it probably will be something else. I'll mm-hmm. be honest. Like, my curiosity is always jumping. I'm always trying to figure out what's next. But yeah, I want to solve real problems for people, especially people who need that problem solved. Like, I think in the tech world, which I appreciate you for asking me to come on here, because people don't normally see me as like a tech person.
Yeah,
right?
You have a startup.
It's totally
you're in
a startup.
The tech world. You have a startup.
It's totally a startup. People kind of just put me in the food lane. They're like, oh, farmers. Are you a farmer? And I'm like, I'm not a farmer. You know, oh, no, I'm not a farmer. I'm just a brother who, you know, works with farms. The grocery stores sometimes work with farms too, you know. So for me, just like solving a problem for my people and people who need that problem solved is what keeps me energized. If I'm not solving a problem, I'm just like, let me just take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's go and have a cocktail. Like, let's read a book. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's do something mindless, because if we're not solving a problem, what are we doing? You know, what are we actually doing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And no, that's great. I love it. And you do have a startup. And I try to convince people sometimes about the stories I tell, because you're not the first food person I've had on either. I've talked to the founder of Kava, the CEO, and people were very confused about why I had him as a tech talk. He was at DC Startup Week.
Wow.
And funny story about that. I had to convince a producer that this was a tech story. So I did convince him eventually.
Good for you.
But it's because... yeah, everything's digital. So if you're doing the digital connection, that's tech.
Yes.
I mean, this really, that's what it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the core of tech is problem solving.
Yes.
You know, there's a bunch of companies, like during the mid-2000s, even now, like folks who just like come up with ideas, like, yeah, I think this is a great idea. And I'm just like thinking to myself, and I see a lot of people investing in it, and I'm just like... Good luck on getting that money back, because it's like you're not really solving a problem. Like, it's a thing that you think people want, but people wanting a product is just not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're like Louis Vuitton. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, the demand is
great. Yeah. It's been around for 100 plus years. It has a name. And at one point, it probably was solving a problem for people.
Right.
Now it's just like a luxury item. But if you're not that, and you're not solving a problem, it's like, that's not a business. That's a hobby at this point.
Exactly. Yeah. You are solving a problem. Final question here. Hurdles. Lots of startups go through hurdles.
Yeah.
How's that going? What hurdles have you had to jump over?
I think there's always hurdles. I think just dealing directly with farms and food under... you know, the current conditions of our environment is challenging, right? Like,
Talking tariffs? Do we have
tariffs? I mean, the food that we source is hyper local, so I don't really deal with the issue of tariffs.
Okay,
you know, like I'm literally transporting my own food at times, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's no middleman transporting my food, or it's not coming from a different country. It's not crossing borders, but like state lines, honestly. What I'm talking about is farmers who, you know, this summer had issues with tomato crop.
Mm.
Like, it was like...
the environment.
They're like flooded one day. Yeah. The sun came out the other day and like burned all their crop up. And it's just like, I guess I don't have tomatoes to sell, you know, this season. Or I got to go further to get those tomatoes, so it's going to cost me more, right? Like, there's those types of challenges. And then there's also tech challenges. There's the reality of like, I'm now getting to the point in my business where I need to upgrade and enhance my technology to allow my customer to do more. You know, people will message me and say, hey, I'm trying to do this through your site. I'm having an issue. I'm kind of getting stuck. Well, that's because when I started this business, you know, I started on a credit card, you know what I'm saying? Like, with a $10,000 limit. And I like,
built. You know what I like about you? You seem to do a lot with a little, because you had that $200 job. And now you started on a credit card with the app. And now you're expanding. But eventually you seem to get there. So that's good.
I mean, to me, I just, again, there's no problem that can't be solved. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes education and curiosity. But at a certain point, you're going to figure it out, right? That's how I feel. But that doesn't mean you stop the train from running.
Right.
The train keeps running unless there's no food on the train. In my instance, the train keeps running, right?
Yeah.
So, like, now I'm looking at ways to add either, like, create a new system for my customers so that access is easier for them, or enhance my current systems. And all those things cost money. So money is also at the core of one of my problems, is that, like,
we all need money.
I'm also, you heard all of my education, psychology, politics. Nowhere in there was there business.
I don't really think it's necessary. To be honest, I find that I interview a lot of CEO and founders, and a lot of them do not have business degrees. They just have the, what you're talking about, the problem-solving skills and the determination. They're motivated, and they figure it out. They crowdsource. They go to some startup pitches, to pitch competition, and they get things going. So you're fine. You're doing great.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I'm learning as I go. And yes, I mean, we always need more resources for all types of things. Like, we're right now kind of in a smaller, like, shared warehousing space, and we're expanding. We'll be getting our own warehouse space this year.
Oh, wow.
Probably in, like, the next couple weeks, we'll be moving in there. And we'll also be increasing our fleet. So right now we just have, like, one refrigerated van. We'll have three.
Wow.
You know, that will go online probably in the next month or so. So, you know, there's opportunities, there's challenges. You kind of just take them as you go, recalibrate, figure out how to keep all your customers happy, keep it consistent. I think for us, we definitely want to make sure that we're consistent. Our quality, it stays where it's supposed to be, which is the best. And just keep pushing. Mm. Keep pushing. Every day there's a new challenge. There's something to tackle. And I wake up every morning ready for it. So
that's great. Yeah. And that's the hardest thing, when you just said the fridge thing, about keeping real food good, is that you gotta be mindful of some stuff gotta go in the freezer, because it's gonna go bad fast. Yeah. I'm sure that's another challenge for you there.
Oh yeah. I mean, again, that's the reason why we're bringing more vehicles online, is because we really want to make sure that our food stays fresh. We want to make sure that when it gets to the customer, they can taste the difference. And that cold chain, and when I say cold chain, I mean, like, the food that comes in on a truck is a truck that has a refrigerator on it. Mm-hmm. And then when it's stored in our warehouse, there's a fridge in the warehouse where that food is stored. And then when it goes out to the customer, there's another refrigerated truck or van that takes that food out to the customer. So when the customer gets their produce, it lasts them through the week, no questions asked. And we like harvest to order. So, like, I'm talking to farmers right now. I receive my food, you know, Friday, Saturday. It's going out Sunday. It's, for me, you can't compromise on that. Again, especially with the community that I serve, where they have resources. They have the traditional grocery stores in their neighborhood, but they don't take as much care as we take. So I want to make sure that the experience is elevated for them. Mm. I think they deserve that. And they'll tell me if I'm not giving them that. Most of my customers are Black women who work hard for their money. They like, brother, you didn't hit the mark this week. I'm like, I am so sorry, Ms. Johnson.
Oh,
we're going to figure it out. The next order's on me.
That's
so
awesome.
We need to make sure, right, that we know people work hard for their money. We want to make sure that they get the best.
That's great. Yeah. Final question. I know I said that two times already.
I love it.
But, you know, someone may approach you about selling this company one day. Would you ever sell?
I don't know. I mean, right now I'm really enjoying owning 100% of the company. Like, I own 100% of the company, right? I get to call the shots. I get to interact with customers the way that I want to. I get to say what I want on my social media, right? I get to say black 1,000 times and nobody, nobody taxes me for it. My shirt, like my jacket even says like five black, right? Like there's no editing, right? There's no filter here. But I don't know. I think some companies need to be sold in order to grow. I think it just depends on the situation. I also understand that if I were to ever have a partner or sell, I will be very picky about that person or that company. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I'm solving a problem for people. And once the business is no longer about solving that problem, it will be obsolete. It will cease to exist. So for me, making sure that we continue to solve that problem as long as the problem exists is paramount. And I don't look at, like, when people think about what, like, oh, they look at bottom line, like, what is the most important thing? What are the KPIs that we're looking at? Mm-hmm. The biggest KPI that I look at is, like, do they keep coming back? Do people talk about us on social media and repost their food and say, I'm so excited about my order this weekend? You know, what are people saying about us? Like, those, to me, are the anecdotes and the KPIs that matter the most. And I don't think it matters who's facilitating the work as long as those things are still at the forefront.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you, Brandon Starks of the People's Market.
Oh, thank
really
you.
Appreciate you for joining us on Tech Talk. This has been really fun. Thank you.
Very fun. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. If you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe, but also leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Thanks so much.